Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. In this episode, I got to sit down with my very good friend, Clay Harkey, the co-founder, owner, and data analyst for Twisted Arrow Goods, a local craftsman shop that specializes in making things that'll last so long you can pass them down across generations. Clay is absolutely one of my longest and best friends in this small business owner world here in Houston. And for as long as I've known him, he has generously invited me in to see them grow their business. And he's always given me a chance to look behind the scenes at what they were doing and why. And if you've ever bought or sold a house with me, it's almost a certainty that you've received some of their products as closing gifts. So I was thrilled when at the last minute, he said that I could record an interview with him and we grabbed this time together. So listen in as Clay and I discuss how Twisted Arrow has evolved over the years, the unique task of selling a lifestyle, and Clay's transition from data scientist to leather worker. Clay Harkey.
Clay Harkey.
Of Twisted Arrow Goods. Man, thank you so much for finally joining me here on the show.
Well, you know, you had to twist my arm. So
yeah, there it
you
is.
You know, I don't do these things for free. Rusty's actually paying me for this.
So that's fine.
For all future people, you
so
now
when you don't
know.
Go paid, you know where you stand in the hierarchy. Because it's going to be, it's Clay first. No, in all earnestness, Clay, I am very grateful to have you on this show.
Thanks, Rusty. Me too, man.
In my journey of entrepreneurship, you, out of all of the people here in Houston, probably gave me the most validity of just letting me hang out and talk shop and talk about the business I was trying to build or maybe pretending to build.
Yeah.
I don't know, somewhere between those two. And you let me do that.
But you were pretending. You were definitely doing it.
It felt like pretending at the time.
You needed like a little confirmation and just like a little just, come on, Rusty.
Yeah.
You know?
And you gave that to me. Yes.
Oh, man.
So,
I appreciate that.
For people who don't know, what's the elevator pitch for Twisted Arrow Goods, all of this?
Oh, gosh. The elevator pitch. Well, we focus on leather goods and candles and knives. We hand make everything in our building and we sell everything out of our building. So all of our leather products are lifetime guaranteed. And our candles are made out of whiskey glasses so that you can reuse them forever. And we like the idea of things lasting forever. So that's a big part of the Twisted Arrow brand is, you know, creating heirlooms, things you're going to pass down generation to generation.
Yeah. So home goods. Leather goods, candles, all of that. You used to call yourself an apothecary. I'm actually looking at the window to see if you took it down.
Yeah. So you've seen Twisted Arrow from start to finish. So you kind of know like all the pivots and everything that we've done. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we definitely started with like furniture and home goods. That was kind of the jumping off point. And, you know, as any business person, once you start kind of diving in and seeing how much money you're losing instead of making, you have to kind of make some hard decisions. But the cool thing about this business is that if things pick up, you always have the ability to like jump back to old hobbies or something like that, that you can bring back to it. And, you know, I don't want to give anybody false hope, but maybe one day we'll be able to get back into some furniture and the apothecary stuff. The apothecary business was just very, very interesting.
How do you define that for people who are like listening to this? How would you define apothecary? Because you're not in here making like tinctures for sore muscles.
Yeah, the apothecary has kind of been like twisted.
I get it. There. Yep.
Over time, but I think like now a good definition of apothecary is like your soaps, your beard oils, basically anything that you would like put on your body, as well as like we put like candles and stuff like that, things that smell good in that category as well. It's just a better word to use than just like saying we're soap guys or something like that, because you know the whole idea is to have kind of like a broad spectrum of skill, or, you know, I use the word skill, but we're learning every day.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess you have to hone your skill every day. And but anyway, you know, the apothecary stuff was really fun. I would love to continue to make it, but, you know, if you look at how the world has changed over just the past year, running an apothecary business is very, very hard to do.
Sure. Yeah. So you kind of pivoted in some.
Yeah.
Of that.
So, and now we've gotten people, now that the world is kind of sort of coming back to normal, you know, asking if we're going to release the apothecary stuff again, but, I don't know.
Yeah.
The best thing I can say is follow us on Instagram.
Yeah. To see what you're selling right now, what you're making.
Yeah. What we're making now and what we're going to be making. I mean, Instagram is kind of like our platform for news, even though I'm very terrible at it and very slow to put things on there. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, which is shocking to me, because some of even my most popular Instagram stuff is filmed in this shop of your stuff, because I can just come in here and point a camera at anything and it's like, look how cool it is. Like that's the irony of you feeling like hesitant and slow to work with Instagram, where it's like, well, you just literally just turn the camera, like point it, like just spin it around like Russian roulette, and whatever it lands on, that's what you're taking a picture of today.
You're not wrong. This building is just awesome. And the opportunity to be in this building, I'm just so thankful for. I mean, you could literally just take pictures of the walls and it would be a cool photo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, juggling all the hats that you got to juggle as a small business owner. Sometimes the last thing you think of is like snapping a photo.
Yeah. Oh, it's certainly a whole different set of skills when you're over here sitting, how to learn how to do leatherworking and candle making and canvas and what do you call it? What do you call seamstressing?
Sewing.
Sewing. Thank you. Thank you. It was right there.
Sewing, upholstery work, that kind of stuff.
Doing all these different things that, like, on top of all of that, to sit there and play with a camera and then settings and all of the editing.
But you know how much of a nerd I am. So, like,
if you were going to do it, that's all you would do.
Yeah, exactly. And you can kind of, I mean, sometimes you can kind of see that on Instagram. You can see like bad post, really cool post. Like, oh my gosh, how'd you, well, you spend some time on it and it looks a little better.
Yeah.
So
I think it's interesting. I think most people wouldn't see that. Maybe now that you say it, if people go dig through your Instagram, they might be able to pick up on it, but obviously we're holding ourselves to a higher standard.
I know, but I mean, I just went through the Instagram and cleaned it up, I think is what people are saying nowadays, to kind of archive old photos photos that don't fit your stuff. It's interesting being a brand nowadays, because not only do you have to focus on like your product, but you also have to focus on how people see your product. Mm. Because at the end of the day, most people who come to buy something from you, they're buying into like that lifestyle of your brand.
Yeah.
So you've got to show that lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're right. You come in here, you snap a picture, boom, like there's the lifestyle. It doesn't take much work, but every once in a while you just kind of, I mean, just as I put in time for my product, I want to put time into how people see my product.
Yeah.
And, that's just, they just go hand in hand. It's just necessary nowadays.
Yeah.
So
it absolutely is.
Oh yeah.
And when you talk about this space, I think that's really interesting. You talk about selling the lifestyle, because it is, right? With realtors, right? We're not selling houses. We're selling the experience of buying a house, really.
Right.
Like that's if I'm doing it right and I'm marketing myself as a realtor, it's less about here's a $2 million house that you'll never afford.
Right.
It's, hey, here's the process of home buying. I'm a trustworthy and decently likable guy. Let me help you in that process. It's debatable.
Yeah. Scale of 1 to 10.
Reasonably.
I mean, you're my realtor, dude, like, so, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
That's scary.
But it's this idea of, you know, selling the lifestyle and selling this idea of the experience of, if you use me, if you buy from you, that this is kind of what you're going to get.
Right.
which, you know, maybe you won't become a cowboy by buying a leather wallet, but you might feel like it just a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great way of putting it. I mean, our stuff is not like terribly cowboy looking. We can make it cowboy looking, but it's really just trying to like get people to think outside the box on what other bigger brands are just trying to shove down your throat all the time. You know, you step into a store like this, it doesn't even have to be my store, but just some of the other amazing stores here in Houston, you walk into the store and it's, I mean, just walking in, you're walking into an experience, and, that experience is like what captivates people. And that's what kind of makes people buy stuff.
Sure.
I mean, it's like, it's kind of weird to talk about how you're trying to sell stuff to people. I'm just a terrible salesman
because
I don't really try to sell anything to people when they come in. I just try to help them out.
Yeah.
You know, what are you looking for? Who are you buying for? What do they enjoy? Those are, I mean, if anybody's ever been here, those are the questions I normally ask somebody when they come in. Who are you buying for? What do they like? That sort of thing. And then I can kind of say, well, these are things that you can get that would, you know, fit their lifestyle. And sometimes people come in here and nothing I have fits their lifestyle. And
it took me
a long time to like, like accept that. I'm like, why are you leaving? Come back, you know? But at the end of the day, like, and you know, everybody's can, you know, there's a lot of people out there that do stuff like this, and you can find your maker. We hope it's us, but
yeah,
sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not.
And that's okay.
Sure. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I've had good friends who haven't used me as their realtor, and it always stings a little bit.
Yeah. I mean,
like, you got to be cool about it.
Yeah. You're just like,
oh, hey, I'm so glad that you were taken care of. That's all that really matters. But like, inside, I'm like,
yeah, deep
really
down,
sucks.
You're like, you traitor.
I thought you liked me. Sometimes it's angry. Sometimes it's just sad. I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but you're also thinking, like, man, I could have gotten you a way better deal.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. That's why I get sad. It's like, no, it was probably the right choice.
It's good they went with them.
Yeah. You know, who knows? But yeah, the idea of the vibe of a space and all of that, I'm not even all that much of a reader. I wish I were. I like the idea of being a reader, but I love Barnes and Noble. I just like to go. I like the smell.
Yeah.
I like they have perfectly nailed like the ambiance that I just want to be around. They've got toys and comic books.
And some of them, they have like the Starbucks. You've got like the combination of like coffee and all of the sweet syrups that they put in there.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Mixed with
that's what this is. Listen, you've got beer and whiskey and leather and all of it. Like this
It's, I have to confess. Okay. There are days I come in here and I can't smell it.
Mm, yeah. That's sad.
And that is what really breaks my heart. As I walk in, I'm like, just smells like another day.
Yeah.
So it takes like, the reason why I want people to come to my store is to come in and reassure me that the place still smells good.
And live vicariously through their olfactory
right,
senses.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They're like, oh, it smells good here. I'm like, yes, it does.
Oh, good. Thank God. Yes, that's amazing. You have a quote on your website. I want you to talk to me about this. And it says, I'll be interested if you know it, but a man who works with his hands is a laborer.
Yeah.
A man who works with his hands and his brain is a craftsman. But a man who works with his hands, his brain, and his heart is an artist.
Yeah, that's not me.
Well, yeah, no, it's Louis Neiser. Louis Neiser.
Yeah. But I'm saying like the third one. Like I'm just the craftsman. I put that in there. I probably should just put dot, dot, dot and cut it off because just kidding.
Yeah.
No, I put my heart into everything.
Do you feel that way? Do you feel like you're an artist, or is that a hard label to accept?
You know, it's an interesting label, you know, because whenever I think of an artist, I think of somebody who's painting or drawing.
Sure.
Right. And then as I got older, I kind of like that definition kind of grew a little bit. And I was like, okay, people who do sculpting or, you know, something.
The other stuff that's in a museum.
Yeah. And like, even to this day, like to me, the word artist is like somebody who creates something that you just look at.
Mm.
You don't use.
Okay.
I know that my definition is wrong, but that's how I've kind of like always had that sort of definition. So when somebody comes in and tells me I'm an artist, like I'm flattered, but like I would never really consider myself an artist. Like I have no artistic training by any means. All of my friends are way more artistic than I am. But yet like I'm the one that gets labeled
sure.
the artist. But I don't know. I think craftsman fits me better. I think that's because a lot of the times, like when I'm designing something, whether it's a product or an Instagram post or whatever, I don't really think too much on like the artistic side of it as much as I think about it from like a usability standpoint or, you know, a quality standpoint. That's where my mind always goes. And then the making of it, I think, is where, you know, like the artistic side comes in, because, you know, it's hard to cut leather, you know, and people come in here and they, you know, are shopping and they want to get a mouse pad and I don't have any on the shelf. So I make one real quick and they're watching me make this in the shop, right?
Yeah.
They're like living this experience with me and they're watching me cut this leather and, you know, not to brag, but they're like, like, how are you cutting it so quickly, so straight?
Sure.
And not having like any, and like, I feel like that would be more like the artistic side of things, just the ability to like do something that's very hard, but make it look very easy.
Hmm.
But the craftsman side of me is like, here's your mouse pad. Like, you're going to be able to use this forever.
Sure.
And
it's less about the experience,
right?
And all that it will bring you. And this will take you to the explore the depths of the unknown via the internet.
Well, I mean, that's great. I might just use that. I tell a lot of people, like when they come in to, you know, a mouse pad is just a, it's a very interesting example I use.
Sure.
I don't know why, but like,
because it's a square piece of leather.
Right. Yeah. It's just, you know, I mean, we've gotten a little bit more like fancy with it to try to make them, you know, somebody sees a price tag on a leather product and they're so used to seeing Amazon prices that when they come into like a handmade shop, they're like, oh, they're charging too much for something. And, you know, so you kind of have to like explain and educate, as you're trying to, you know, sell a product or whatnot. But, you know, I had a couple come in here one time that were like, you know, we really buy the mouse pad for the way it smells. And they're like, you should change the name of it from mouse pad to stress reliever.
Okay.
Because whenever they would get stressed out, they would just pick it up and smell it. Because it's, you know, it's like full grain leather, right?
Sure.
Like pick it up and smell it. Smells good. And it takes them back to, you know, I don't know, simpler times.
Or
something where they're not sitting in front of their computer for 8 hours a day, right? I guess just the smell of leather just makes people think of outside. And that's a lot of our brand is we make stuff for you to use outside. So it's interesting that like the mouse pad, the thing that you use in an office or at home or whatever, is something that triggers somebody to think of outside.
Yeah.
So
when it's literally never used outside.
Right. Exactly.
Nobody's at a campsite and be like, well, let me pull out my mouse pad.
Let me crunch some numbers real quick.
Yeah.
Can you stoke the fire? Where's my s'more?
Where's my s'more? Hold on 1 second. Let me finish this Excel spreadsheet. I would posit, I think that, yeah, the artistry of it is less about, you know, trying to communicate a feeling or a moment. Though, like, I think your work does do that. I think the mouse pad does that. I think that so much of this brand, so much of the stuff that's, like, just all around us does evoke things. And that's, like, the best working definition I've heard of, like, an artist, an artistry is, like, making something that leads others to experience something you've experienced.
Right.
And I think that's best I've gotten, closest I've gotten.
They're way smarter than we are, Rusty.
But I think that's what you do here. Like, I think that so much of what you do, and when it talks about this quote, talks about making stuff with your hand, your brain, obviously it's, you're putting in the effort.
Right.
You are thinking and being intentional about the things that you're making. But then, I mean, the heart is obviously the most abstract part of that.
Right.
I think that it's putting your passion and your intention and trying to make something good and true and meaningful somewhere in that spectrum.
Right.
And so much of what you do, whether it's a gun holster or a, you know, a dog collar, like it's made to be good. And
yeah,
so sweet. I think I would say you're an artist in that sense.
Oh, thanks.
And I think you should try to wear that.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because a lot of people think that like when you say you're putting your heart into it, they think of like love, they think of passion, they think like you're doing it because you love something or whatnot. But a lot of the times, like passion can be drawn from something else, like hate.
you know,
like I hate this certain type of wallet so much that I'm going to design something completely different because I hate that wallet.
Yeah.
And you become very passionate on design.
It's solving this problem.
Right. Because you hate how it was made in the past, or you hate how other people do it, or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But not that like a lot of my passion comes from hate.
So this is the hate section of wallets.
Yeah, all of these exactly.
Are the hate wallets.
But you know, it's definitely like, that's still part of like your heart, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, solving problems is a typical person would say, okay, like that comes from your brain, right? You're solving problems with your brain, but like that's my heart and soul. That's what I like to do. Even when I had a corporate job, solve problems. That's where my heart is at.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's there. I mean, it's not very artistic, but it's very logical.
Yeah. It's a kind of art, we'll say.
Yeah.
You mentioned your corporate job. You very proudly, when I first met you, mentioned that you were a data analyst and a data scientist, I think is actually what you said.
Thanks, Corporate America, for that title.
And even your current LinkedIn profile title for Twisted Arrow Goods reads co-founder and data analyst.
Yes.
Talk to me about your former life, what you did, and how in the hell that transitions from like that into starting all of this.
I'm actually kind of glad you like asked this question, because I get a lot of people asking me, how do you go from being this huge computer and math nerd to making things out of leather? Mm-hmm. Like, how does that tie? And it's a hard question.
Sure.
Because like, I still do it. I just do it for myself. Right, I still do all of the math and the analytics and all the statistics and stuff like that, but I'm not doing it for somebody else per se. I'm doing it for myself.
Define data scientist or data analyst. What I mean, like, I get that it feels like it's somewhat self-explanatory, but at the same time, like, I've never had that job.
Yeah,
I don't know anybody other than you that's had that job.
Well, so data scientist was coined. Probably back in 2011 or something like that, or early 2000s. And it's basically a programmer, a mathematician or a statistician, and a IT nerd all mixed into one person. And then the cherry on top is being able to communicate all the complicated things that you've been able to uncover.
Got it.
The scientist part is very traditional in the sense of scientist, which I think one of the reasons why I got out of corporate America is because a lot of corporations don't believe in experimenting.
Okay.
Right. They just want
testing hypotheses.
Right. They just want to make money.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what they're trying to do, which you can't blame them.
Sure.
But it really is like you start with a hypothesis, right? What can we do to better something? What can we do to make more money? What can we do to save more money?
Yeah.
You know, and it's very, very 30,000 foot high level thinking. But the ability to go from that 30,000 feet down to producing something and then bringing it back to a 30,000 foot view for
how did executives. It go? What were the experience? So we tried this.
Yeah, exactly.
We moved this thing to this shelf at this level. We tried it. Here's the data. It proves that it sold 12.8% more by being on this shelf than that shelf.
Yeah, and then quantify that 12.8, right? You quantify everything, literally everything. Even things you don't think you can quantify. It's like, we got to figure out how to quantify this thing. But I would say you know, when I graduated, data science was still very baby, and it is still kind of very baby in its maturity. But I spent more time teaching people what I was doing than doing what I needed to do. And
like at the companies where you were working.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the managers that hired me, right? I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what you hired me for. Like, you know, but yeah, I mean, leather was a way for me to unwind. Because I would stare at a computer for 12 to 14 hours a day and thinking, just staring at a whiteboard thinking.
Yeah.
You know, staring at a whiteboard and staring at a computer screen, I just...
You're like, I'm out.
I mean, I don't mind doing it. There are days where I sit here in the shop and I stare at my computer all day. But I have the ability to choose whether or not I want to do that day or do something else.
And so you turn to leather to like...
Right. When you're sitting there and you're making a wallet or you're sitting there and you're making a backpack, you're not thinking about anything except making that item.
You're present.
As soon as you drift is when you start messing up. And leather, when you cut it or you put a hole in it or you run it over something that's dirty,
that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got to be very concentrated on what you're doing. And that concentration is just very therapeutic.
Yeah.
For me. And it's a great way just to unwind. I mean, some of the stuff we make seems very, very simple. And I mean, for someone like me who's made thousands of something, it is very simple. So I just sit there and just go to town.
Yeah.
And but every once in a while, you know, after you make about 100 keychains, you're like, okay, maybe it's time for me to go check to make sure I can sell 100 keychains. Let's jump up on the computer and figure out, you know, if this is still a good product to make.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. So you transitioned then to like, you are doing that and you're using leather as a hobby, as a distraction, as something to center yourself and bring you present when your work is really kind of abstract in so many ways. I'll hit you with this quote that I really like. I think this was like, and I'm pretty sure it was like a legit, like ancient rabbi who said this, but I don't know his name. So that's my fault. The man who works with his hands should rest with his mind. And the man who works with his mind should rest with his hands.
Mm.
And I've always found that to be really true of in the seasons in which I was working, you know, more manual labor-y type things where it's just like, you know, making sandwiches at Panera all day or just like moving and using my body, like that I'd get home and I really would just like read. Boom.
Yeah.
But now I spend most of my life thinking and making money from conversations and Googling things and taking videos and smashing them together on my computer. And now I find that my like rest cannot be like real heady rest.
Right.
I don't even like watching TV can be too heavy sometimes.
Where you got to like, put on something like Harry Potter.
You know? And so it's, I find better rest when it's, I'm going to like, honestly, like play Lego, like bricks with my kids or,
See, you're lucky. You got the kids to help you. I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah, though. For
like,
sure.
A lot of people are always like, oh, kids, they're a handful, but like, man, is that not an opportunity just to like slow down?
Yeah. You know? I wonder too, like I'm excited. I think next year I'm going to like really step into jujitsu
and do
all of that. Being a dad, finally. I'll finally step into it. I'm going to own it. I think he's about six.
Yeah.
I thought I'd show up.
You're like, okay, I guess I'll.
Seems cool now.
I'll go to parent day.
Yeah, finally.
Teach all the kids what you do all day. Wait, so let me get this right.
Kids, I don't do anything.
I don't do it.
I do a lot of nothing. And it's worked out so far. Dreams come true. I'm a living version of Seinfeld. And not nearly as funny. This idea of like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is like really popular. Like it's a really big deal. And I know that like MMA has gotten bigger. But I mean,
right.
It really is. Like over the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Some people did it. Now it's like everyone. It's like new CrossFit.
I don't even like it and I know about it.
Yeah.
So
and it's out there. But I just wonder too. You mentioned like the kids as like the stress reliever or the like the engagement. And like, yeah, like I wrestle my boys daily and it's like, that's nice. And yeah. I just wonder in our very like sterile environments now that we just don't get enough of that kind of touch.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, you know, how much time in the past that it was just like, oh, we like need to like, yes, it's like the hugging and like the right. physical affection. But a part of that is like, sometimes just like,
Beating someone up.
We're getting beat up a little bit and being like, yeah, okay, we're good. And now I can move on and I've released some of that stress. But yeah, my boys, like fighting and wrestling with my boys is like a joy. And I have never thought of it as like a genuine stress reliever until you said that, to be like, oh yeah, no, sometimes like just putting a kid in a headlock for a little bit makes me feel better.
Makes you feel better. It's like Letterkenny. I could watch kids fall off bikes all day, you know? I really could. Like,
oh my gosh.
It's very therapeutic.
I let them tap out, for the record.
Yeah, okay, but, that's good.
But
make sure that's on the record.
It's on the record. All that to say, you were working corporate, you were thinking with your head, and then you decided to start Twisted Arrow. How did that happen?
Yeah, so
how,
I stopped like, thinking with my head, basically. The head just,
no more.
Just went away.
And, caveman stuff.
No, you know, you could. I mean, you can ask my parents. Like, I've always wanted to own my own company ever since I was a kid. I just never knew what it was going to be.
Sure.
And just my family, all the people in my family all like to make things with their hands. And some of them have been very successful and some of them just were hobbyists and, you know, sold stuff on the side or whatnot. But at the end of the day, it's just very natural for me to take something apart, put it back together or build something or, or whatnot. And, I like using that side of my brain. I think that it directly correlates with the, like the computer nerd in me because, you know, like we stated earlier, I still like to solve problems. So it's just a different type of problem. But you'd be surprised at how much mathematics you can throw at something as simple as leather goods.
Yeah.
You know, it's a wild world we live in right now. I mean, you can learn a trait just by going on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was actually kind of amazing. The other day I was watching a Netflix documentary or a Netflix show. I can't remember what it was, but you know, all the people on the show, it said like their name on the screen and then it had like where they went to school and, you know, stuff about them. And this one person popped up and it was a name and it said YouTube University. And I was like, YouTube doesn't have a school. And I was like, oh,
that's how common it's
gotten. I get it. Yeah. YouTube University. They learned everything on YouTube. And like, that is fascinating.
Yeah.
Right. Like the computer nerd, right. The, you know, the internet weird person in me is like, that's incredible. And then the craftsman in me is also like, that's incredible. Because dying arts, such as leathercraft, people are putting on the internet and more people are learning. And you've got more people interested in something that by, you know, the look of society is not very like prevalent, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you don't see content on Facebook or Instagram very often of people just making things unless the algorithms already kind of picked you up.
Yeah. And, it already knows.
We could talk about that all day too. You know,
sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think they go hand in hand. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. As somebody who did go to school to learn a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But then also does something that people could learn on YouTube University. How do you feel about higher education?
Oh gosh. man, this is a, let me preface with, go Cougs. I graduated from U of H, got my degree in, management information systems, business degree, whatever. Like I loved it. It was a great experience, but to me, that's what college is now, an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, I mean, who's to say if it's going to be relevant here in the near? I mean, we've got everything at our fingertips.
Yeah.
The only thing we have to do is actually go and learn.
Yeah.
And, you know, as education transforms and as technology transforms, you know, I feel like people are less motivated to learn stuff.
Sure.
The development of phone applications, which I could have been a millionaire, but my professor told me not to do an idea that has now been used. And I'm pretty upset about that. But
it was Napster.
Yeah, it was not Napster. It was actually a really good
idea.
That's a
deep, I just feel like that's a deep cut that's really going to like going to miss actually a significant part of my listeners. Napster, I don't get it. I don't know what that is.
They're going to be like,
freaking A.
Yeah, no, they're not going to get it. LimeWire?
LimeWire. Yeah, they're not going to know.
No, they're not going to get it. No, I mean, it's, I don't know if it's necessary for people to go to college anymore. I try to encourage younger people to pick up a trade. The education system, I don't know it well,
sure.
But I do know that a lot of people who work in education have only been in education.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say that they're preparing you for the real world, they don't know the real world. They've only been in education. So the real world to them is education. And I think that is why so many people are spurred to continual education, right?
Yeah.
Let me get my master's. Let me get my doctorate. Let me get all these other things that are great. Don't get me wrong. They are great. But like your career, like your real life is education.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me how the people who see kids the most are the ones that are like, you need to go to college. You need to get a degree. You need to get a good job. To this day, I still do not understand what they mean by a good job unless they are referring to a desk job.
Mm.
Because I would consider my job a very good job.
Yeah.
I mean, I get to do what I love to do or hate to do.
Sometimes, yeah. Depending on the product.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that sort of perspective is not relevant or present in today's schools. So, you know, go talk to somebody who, you know, younger than 21 years old and ask them how many times somebody asked them if they wanted to go to trade school.
Yeah.
I'm sure they don't even know what trade school is.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of them won't. Yeah.
And the other thing is they're like, oh, well, you go to school, get good grades, go to college, get good grades, get a job. And, you know, no offense to accountants out there. I'm just going to use you as an example, but like you're replaceable.
Yeah.
Right. The reason why the big four and all those are out there and they're the big four is because that's where you go.
Yeah.
When you graduate, you go work for one of these, but you're replaceable. You're spending tens of thousands of dollars on an education to get out of school where the pieces of paper that you're shown in high school show you're going to be making a certain amount of money. So you have this expectation in your head already. And then you get out and you get, you know, an entry-level job at the big four and you're getting paid, you know, $40,000, $45,000, $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's good money. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But you know how much a welder makes?
Yeah.
They can make six figures in 2 years.
Like a lineman for the electric company?
Oh my gosh. People who work on windmills?
Yeah.
I mean, they're making a lot of money. And the reason why is because nobody knows that skill.
Yeah.
I've got friends that are welders that work for oil and gas companies. I mean, they make more money than some of the executives do.
Sure.
Because they know a skill.
Yeah.
That somebody else doesn't know. Yeah, I just don't know if college is like, it's not for everyone.
Sure.
Statistics show that there are a lot of dropouts after the first year of college, especially in some of the bigger universities, A&M, UT, Texas Tech. I mean, after their first year of college, they're back at a community college, bless their heart. I mean,
sure.
They don't know.
Sure. I mean, I wish I would have done it. Like, I mean, I got a bachelor's degree just so that I could go get my master's, right? Which is a master of divinity. So like, it didn't really matter what I got my bachelor's in.
Right, exactly.
You just I ended up going to an expensive private school because I thought that was like the right thing to do.
Exactly.
But when it comes to my education, I would have been just fine going to a community college, working, saving us money. And I'd have less student loan debt now.
Yeah, exactly.
All these years later, a decade later.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my ego hadn't gotten in the way. I've been like, oh, this is what I gotta do. Yeah. A huge thank you to Clay and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. If you enjoyed this episode, this is actually just the first half of the conversation that I got to have with Clay. So be sure to listen to the next one where we discuss the importance of validation for small business owners, how our definitions of success have changed over the years, and the role mental health plays in a business. In the meantime, be sure to go follow Clay on Instagram at Twisted Arrow Goods and check out some of their amazing leather goods. I am absolutely partial to the Rusty Bracelet, a simple but excellent accessory that is in fact named after yours truly. So go get one and support what Clay is doing. If this is your first time listening to Houston Made, I'd absolutely recommend that you go check out some of our other episodes with guests from all kinds of industries, ranging from student mentors to photographers, realtors to podcasters. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I'd love to hear about your projects and the things you're working to get off the ground. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Alwegfi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. And as always, Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com.